have to love it. You have to love the sounds of Augusta. And Jim Nantz, hello friends, whispering for 4 days straight. Oh my goodness. Everything that comes with it. Vern,
you gotta see Al's brother. You gotta see Al's brother running to Vern calling the tiger pitch.
Okay, we've got it. We'll play it. We'll play it a lot tomorrow and certainly by Friday, okay? The wheels are in motion. Vern Lundquist calling Al's brother running the 40. It's something we gotta tease. Right, we gotta tease and we'll play that tomorrow and Friday a lot. But Graham Dillette's coming up here in a moment from Augusta. But we've been talking about this for a long time. We haven't done a golf draft in a long, long time. We do it for the majors only 4 times a year. Last time we did it was for the Masters back in November. Yeah. And we flipped a coin about 5 minutes ago. Heads was the call. Heads was the result. And that means the O-Dog is officially on the clock. The way this is going to work is we go back and forth, back and forth.
And then at the end, I don't think one of the Canadians is going to be in our top 5 picks. So we'll do the – you have the first pick in the Canadian draft because I got the first pick in this one. So we pick our 5 players in the Canadian afterwards. You can go first.
Oh, I like that. Okay, sportsmanship. All right, I'm on board with that. That works for me. So
I'll waste the clock. Yeah, I'll waste no time, and we'll motor through this because we got GD coming up. Dustin Johnson, slam dunk. Can't believe there's any other selection. Dustin Johnson, first overall Masters pick.
All right, so you're looking for history. Back-to-back at Augusta, 5 months in between, not playing so well right now, but loves that course, and he's a stud, number one player in the
world,
Dustin Johnson.
Just remember what we were talking about 4 months ago. Nobody played golf like him, mashing drivers, putting, iron play. Just watch what you say. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you who I'm going to take. This might surprise some people because I think some people have me leaning towards one guy in particular, but I'm going with Justin Thomas at 2. I got JT at 2. The way he just played at the Players was absolutely lights out. That Saturday-Sunday performance at the Players probably didn't get enough chatter because it was more about DeChambeau melting down, Lee Westwood melting down. That guy put on an absolute clinic, and he loves this course. He's waiting to win at this course. I believe he will. It's just a matter of time. I am on Justin Thomas with my number one pick. Oh,
I have to think outside of the box with this one, and I think after learning his lesson in the wet conditions, my guy, and who's always been my guy, Bryson DeChambeau, will be my second selection.
Oh, I can't believe you took Bryson. What do you make of that,
Festuck? Bryson.
You've heard him call Bryson forever.
I was going to say, I've been a loyal listener to the show. I didn't think you were a Bryson guy, O-Dog.
No. Me neither.
I've seen what he's done in a couple tournaments where he understands. I think in November, I think he was trying to hit his driver to Mars. And I think he just realized that that's not quite necessary. He can pull that out at certain times. He's ready to win at Augusta National.
Well, I like it. I mean, I can't lie to you. That's probably who I was taking here. If he was still on the board, I was going with him. I thought you were going to go a different direction. But the theme of the last 2 picks has been guys who are on the verge of getting that done. DeChambeau's got his major. Yep. He won at the U.S. Open, but he's still waiting for a green jacket. Justin Thomas, he's got majors. He's waiting for one at Augusta. I'm going to go with the Danny Willett 2016 storyline on top of waiting to break out Johnny Rahm, the new Papa Hill.
I already had it written down.
Yep. I love John Rahm. I like the fact that he showed up Tuesday night, throws his rhythm off a little bit, don't overthink it, just show up and hack. And DJ plays this course exceptionally well, clearly. Over the last 3 years, outside of DJ, no one scored better for 3 straight years than John Rahm. He will be in contention, and I love it. I got Rahm at 2. So you have DJ and Bryson. I have Thomas and Rahm. You're on the clock with the 3rd pick.
This is an educated golf-watching selection here. It's a guy that's mega consistent, and I think he's ready to take the leap to the next level. Patrick Cantlay. He is my guy and always has been, and I love what he does out on the golf course. He's not exactly going to hoot and holler out there, but he can hit his golf ball. Patrick
I like that
Cantlay.
Pick. Yeah, I like that pick. This is where it really starts to get complicated for me. Because I am staring at a guy that I really don't want to take.
<Uh-oh>.
And I have been loud about him all week. Loud.
It's Rory McIlroy. The pick. Rory McIlroy.
It's not Rory McIlroy.
Okay.
It's another guy who has been getting a lot of love recently. I don't know if I can do it. Yes, precisely. I just don't know if I can do it, but because it goes against everything I've been saying, and all my instincts are telling me don't do it. But
right.
He's still on the board at pick six. I guess I'm going to go with it. This is poisonous. It's going to put me in an awful state of mind, but I will take Jordan Spieth at three.
It's a good selection.
I love
Jordan
Spieth.
That
love
guy
it.
Knows he loves Augusta National.
Yeah, he's playing
good
well.
There.
You like that, Festruck? You like that pick? You okay with that?
I love it. I mean, the guy, he's been second twice, he's been third, and he's won. I mean, the guy knows that course like the back of his hand. He's a natural out there.
All right, great pick by me. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, number four. Who do you got? Oh,
you talk about taking a guy you don't want to. I just got to think, after going to Tiger's living room and sniffing the trophies, he says to himself, I want one of those trophies. Rory McIlroy is my next selection. He is a wild card because sometimes he just goes and just like in November, he was garbage, barely made the cut, and then he started rising up the leaderboard. I think he wins one of these eventually. Rory McIlroy is my selection.
Well,
wow.
I
and you'll
can't...
know tomorrow, Sanzi was right. He's got to have a good first round. If he has a good first round, mark him down
Watch
for
out.
The size on the green jacket.
You look at what he has done at Augusta. The fact that he hasn't won obviously sticks out more than anything else, but he is in contention all the time.
All the time.
Every year he's T5, T3, T7, T11. Like he's always in there. He's always in the mix, and it's just a matter of whether or not he can find a way to make it happen. But, all right, you got McIlroy. This is where you got to start getting a little bit creative. And
and
I am going – I'm going to make a pick here that I think might shock the world, that I think I could probably get in the fifth round. I'm going to take Cameron Smith at number four.
Ooh.
Cameron Smith at number
four. The Aussie.
He's the last couple of times at Augusta, including in November, this guy is on the verge. His short game is so dialed. He scrambles. He's got
a
mullet.
You can add that cookie duster of his, too.
Love his stash and the mullet. That alone allows me to make him my fourth selection. Cameron Smith, I will take it four.
Off the board pick.
Yeah, it is off the board. There are a lot of other bigger names that are ahead of him. But that's a guy I wanted, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to go for it and take it.
I'm going to let our co-host, Dave Festchuk, make this selection for me. It's Patrick Reed or it's Finau, Festchuk. It's your selection on Team O-Dog. Who will be my fifth selection?
You got to go with P. Reed. You got to go with the Patrick
Reed.
I love
it. Patrick
Reed.
I needed someone to say it for me. Thank you, Festchuk.
Yeah,
the man rolls putts, man. Number one putter on the PGA Tour. He's a past champion, and as you say, who knows what he'll get up to in those Georgia woods.
Yep, that is very true. This now leaves an opportunity. I am staring at four different names, and maybe I can do the same thing that we just did with Festchuk. I'll put you on the spot here, Dave. I guess this is like call a friend, right? Quickly here. I'm looking at Schauffele, Morikawa, Finau, Daniel Berger, I think, is
straight vibe.
You love
sneaky.
Him and his tight pants. You
sneaky.
Love his tight pants.
Yes, he's got the Adidas gear. He looks solid. We love it. Those are the four. Xander, Morikawa, Finau, Berger. The one in particular, as I call a friend, Dave Festchuk, does that stick out to you?
I think Morikawa is hitting the ball so well. Maybe the best ball striker, you know, in approach shots on the PGA Tour. I got to go Morikawa.
Colin Morikawa. I will take him. That is my fifth pick. Okay? There's so many more good players on the board, dude. I want almost
a lot
of good players.
Why don't we let our next guest dictate the Canadian selections?
I like it. Okay, here he is, one of the great Canadian golfers of all time. He's down there covering the tournament for TSN. Here's our buddy Graham Dillette. What's happening, Graham?
Hey, fellas. How are you?
Well, we're doing
how's
really well.
How's Puffy doing down there, buddy? Is Puffy up to no good, or how's things down there?
He's actually just finished barbecuing about 15 burgers for everyone, so he's doing good. Dropped his phone in the pool, regrouped, and cooked some burgers for the boys.
Right in his element. I love it. He's always in his element, especially on the road. We just went back and forth on our Masters draft, and now we've got one round left, and it's the Canadians. It's Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes. And without telling you who's got the option to take this pick,
There's a third, fellas. There's a third guy.
Well, Weirsy. Yeah, Mike Weirs. But in terms of winning the tournament, are you saying we should think of Mike Weir ahead of Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes? Is that what you're telling us?
I don't know. I think he deserves a little respect, that's all.
Yeah, he does. But it's just not for gambling purposes. That's all we're saying.
I'm just kidding. Both those guys have the potential to play well. I think Corey Connors has just really proven himself as just such a good player. Like, you know, I think I had said on TSN today too, like, he's getting respect now from media, but he's been getting respect from players for, you know, about a year now. Like, guys really know how good this player is, how good he is as a player. That's not to take any shot at Matt, because obviously, I mean, he made the Tour Championship last year. He's doing some great things in his own right. But I think from a ball striking standpoint, Corey's the play here, you know, from a gambling perspective this week. But and I think they both have a good chance of playing well.
Lock it in. Corey Connors will be
Mackenzie
my Canadian
Hughes.
Pick. All right, you got Mackenzie Hughes. You got Hughes.
I love it.
All right, do you? Okay, we'll see. See what happens this weekend. But what we've heard from afar, you're down there. They say this all the time. Like, oh, you always joke about this. When we show up at Sawgrass, it's the greatest condition in the history of
every
the tour.
Every year.
And I've heard that through the grapevine, that Augusta is primed and prepped like we've never seen before. Is there any truth to that?
It looks unbelievable.
Does it look good?
It looks unreal. Yeah, I mean, definitely much better than, like, last year. Like, the only other time I'd been here, obviously, is when I played in 2014, and I remember being just impeccable and perfect, and that's how it looks right now. Like, last year, they had a little bit of the, you know, some grainy Bermuda kind of sticking up, and it's just not as pretty as, like, the overseeded rye. And it looks pure. It really does.
Graham, do you think we're going to see some stuff and possibly – if it's playing firm as fast, like you said, and the way these guys are hitting it, do you think DJ, if he goes 100% with his driver, or Bryson or Rory, like, we're going to see some numbers into par fives and possibly par fours that we've never seen before?
Yeah, I think that's a good chance for sure. You know, I think the par fives playing when it's firm like this are going to obviously play a little bit easier, but – that being said, though, like, it's like, if you're not in the, you can bomb it way down there. Like, I think of, like, 15 is a perfect example. Like, if that green gets firm and fast, it's such a shallow green, and you need to obviously carry the water. So you're probably looking at, like, a middle number at the minimum there. And if you land that middle of the green or anything past middle, like, it's going over the back when it's firm and fast. So, like, even though you have, it seems easier to the eye, like, when you're on TV watching it, but as a player, like, you don't, any shot that lands in that front third of that green coming in is an accident. I guarantee that. It's either a miss hit or a miss club, or they misjudge the wind, because you're better off just trickling over the back of that green and having a chance than you are. So, like, even though you're hitting a lot of shorter irons in, it doesn't necessarily make it that much easier if the greens are firm. And I think when it's firm and fast, it just brings in so many more players into the mix. The cream will rise to the top as far as, like, the top players will play better in the firm and fast conditions, but you don't necessarily, it's not a bomb and gouge course like it was in November last year. So, like, a guy like, you know, like Colin Morikawa, I came on right when you guys were kind of talking about him. Like, I think he's a great pick because he hits it so good, and, like, the coming in from the fairways into firm greens is actually going to be an advantage this year, whereas last year, I mean, you could hack a wedge out of the rough, Bryson could, or Dustin could, or whatever, even though Dustin drove it so well last year. Because the greens were so soft, there was no real premium on fairways, and I think there's going to be more of that this year.
So we're having the draft here, Grant, between O-Dog and Hayes and making their picks. And Hayes took Spieth kind of against his better instincts with his third overall pick. And you understand why he'd have some hesitation, because – you know, until he won the Valero Texas Open last weekend, he hadn't won in 4 years. He'd been all over the map. I mean, what do you make of the way Spieth has been able to sort of bring it back to focus in the last few weeks, combined with that long gap where he was really in no man's land?
Yeah, it's amazing, man. Like, what a game, right? Like, you go from the top of the world, like, literally seemed almost unbeatable for a couple years, to just completely lost, right? Like, it's, I think only golf can that something like that ever really happen. And, you know, then the confidence obviously goes, and it's just a struggle to find that. But, you know, he's been showing signs for the last few weeks here, and you know, is it, to finally get it done last week, I think is massive for the confidence. And you know, if a guy like with his track record at Augusta, and he comes in with confidence for the first time probably since 2017, you know, I think that there's potential for him to definitely win the golf tournament. Like, I mean, there, I think he's the number two overall as far as the short odds. And I think it's for a reason, because if he's feeling good around Augusta, and it's not a course where you really, there's like a massive premium on driving, even though I just said like it does help. But like, it's, his short game is so good. His touch around the greens is like, just imagination on the greens to see lines that like, you know, guys like me just can't see. Like, he's special in on the greens, and that's why he's got such a good record here.
Graham, you were talking about the different shots you have to get hitting that golf course. 15 is one that's interesting. Like, do guys, like number 9, you got to hit uphill with a downhill lie. Do guys got to, like, screw around with the lofts of their golf clubs or anything like that at that course? Because there's just some incredibly difficult uphill and downhill lies, or just you got to adjust to it.
No, I mean, like, guys would have all their standard lofts and lies on their irons. You know, as far as like, you know, pitch and wedge through or 9-iron through long irons, but guys might change their wedges, you know, depending on the turf conditions and stuff like that going into the week. And they might even have maybe a backup 60 just in case we get some rain on Friday, if things soften up with just a little bit more bounce or maybe a little softer leading edge so it doesn't dig. But, you know, other than that, it's like, that's almost trying to think too much instead of just playing the game.
How does that apply to Brooks Koepka, the, you know, undulation of the course, the hilliness of the course, what he's dealing with his knee? And it's his right knee, so maybe it wouldn't affect his swing as much necessarily in terms of just impact and being able to turn on a ball, but walking 72 holes at Augusta with, you know, a bum knee effectively, how's he going to have enough steam? How can he keep this
yeah,
up?
Yeah, I sorry to interrupt you, man. Yeah, I think that's the big question mark with him and going into the week. And I don't know how much he's been walking at home, but he lives in Florida where it's super flat. I mean, there is some big hills out here, and there's a lot of side slopes and side hills and up and down. And, you know, like even for someone who's healthy, it's a pretty good walk. And for guys that walk, you know, week in and week out, 4 or 5, you don't ever really think about it. But on a course like that or like Torrey South or whatever, you get done, you're like, oh, my legs are tired from that walk, and you do it all the time. So, you know, he's had the time off and he's got the bum knee. So I think that's definitely a big question mark for him.
Well, we'll see. It's going to be fun. Go ahead, O.
Before we get you out of here, I just want to know, I see you barbecuing the most luxurious things on earth. Why would you let Sean Cameron barbecue hamburgers when you are like
well,
a master
frozen
chef?
They're frozen burgers from like Kroger, man. They're not. It's not a real barbecue.
You didn't offer up anything.
What's that? No, I did a beef tenderloin the first day we were here and chopped it all up into some fillets. It turned out pretty good.
That's what we're talking about.
All right. Well, yeah. I have a question.
Does Hayes swing right-handed or left-handed? That's the honest question.
You tell us, what should he do? Tell us what he should do, GD. I know you saw the video.
Both looked okay, I would say, but I honestly don't know which way he has more power from.
That's my concern.
He was brushing that shag carpet pretty nice, though.
Yeah, there was actually the sound up. It sounded great, man. I hit that thing flush, and that's all that really matters is it sounded clean. But that is never a good sign when a guy's like, I don't know, like left, right, not much power either way. That's probably not a good sign. But it's more
is this bet actually ever going to happen, or what's the
shooting left?
The COVID and stuff. But.
Yeah, it's tough right now. We'll get out there 100%. I will happily hit the range and then play around all left. Like I putt left.
No. Okay, no, but I'm talking about the round.
Oh, the Nash. Oh, that's a totally different story. We don't know if they're going
to. That's up to them, man. We're waiting to hear if we can even do it. I mean, we got to find someone that likes us that will bring us out there, and if they will let us out there.
That's the issue. Last year with COVID, they just didn't have any guests. That's what it was. No, we were told pretty early on. They just said, no one can bring a guest out, so we can't bring you out with, like, a camera crew and playing out here in the Nash. But once the green light turns on, man, we're going 0 to 60. It's going to happen. So
Well, I don't know how to do any of that Instagram Live or anything like that, but make sure that I'm aware of what's going on because I got to buzz in, just chime in just for a second or two.
You got it, man. You'll be one of the first ones we reach out to. We'll chat again soon. Right. Thank you for this.
And I do want the live odds going in as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's happening. The board's moving a lot based on what you just said alone. Your analysis of my swing is probably going to lead to the numbers changing a little bit. But we'll keep it posted and have a fun one down there. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah. Right on, fellas. Take care.
There he is, Graham Dillette, joining us. The Golf Insider Report, brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers, and the Masters tipping off tomorrow, or teeing off tomorrow morning, I should say. Leafs in action tonight with the Habs in town. We'll tee that up with Darren Dreger, our Hockey Insider. Get more of an update on Vancouver. Dregs has an update on when they may actually be playing again, and it does sound like they're planning on playing again and relatively soon. So get you an update on that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, the Leafs are back in action tonight, back home against Montreal. The news of the day is that William Nylander will be held out of the lineup for precautionary reasons. Came in contact with someone that is COVID positive, and he's going to stay away from the team. It wasn't anyone on the team, clearly, or else we would have known that by now. But out of precautionary reasons, he's going to stay out of the lineup tonight. But he was at the morning skate today, as you pointed out, Dave. Kristen Shilton tweeting that out earlier today. Willie was there, so he was in the room and out there doing his thing. And between morning skate and 5 o'clock, a positive – or not a positive test came back, but he must have found out that he had been in contact with someone that was positive.
Yeah, it's somebody outside of the hockey team, obviously. How does that transaction happen? Like, does this one of his friends text him and say, hey, I got COVID, so he's got to report that to the Leafs? Or
I would assume that's got to be the chain of events. Yeah, like uber honesty, and someone he knows or someone he was in contact with revealed that information, let's say at 2 o'clock today or whatever. Willie probably sent it in. They said, all right, we got to keep you out and test repeatedly. And it's just one more news story. Like, Dregs is coming up here, and Dregs been chasing this Vancouver story. He's got all the details on it. He's a hockey insider. We're getting closer to the trade deadline, and we're seeking COVID scoops. But here he is, our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Do you ever think you'd be in this position, Dregs?
No, obviously not. I mean, this is just unfortunate as an understatement. And you know, as much as, you know, you're always interested in how things are shaking down team by team in the National Hockey League, I also think it's important to make sure that the information is on point and specific to the Vancouver Canucks. There's been a lot of misinformation that has been supplied by both the province of BC and indirectly and by the National Hockey League. And it's not on purpose by the NHL. It's just sticking to protocol, which is identifying the main roster players. So their numbers have always been lower than the numbers that I've reported through the process in the last week plus, right? But in my mind, you know what? The taxi squad players, they count. You know, the coaches count. The support staff member who tested positive, that person counts. So I think that's why the Vancouver Canucks came out as honestly and as transparent as they did today, divulging the full numbers and acknowledging, despite the fact that the province yesterday said that there was no identification of a variant, the Canucks came out and said, yeah, there has been. It's been confirmed that, you know, a number of individuals associated with the Canucks have been infected by the P1 variant, and the NHL has confirmed that. So, again, for me, it's more about making sure that the information stays on point and remains accurate.
Darren, is there a chance that some of the Canucks players like can just say, like, don't even think about asking me to return this season? Like, could that be out there? Or just thinking about this thing unfolding, coming back to even think about playing, it just seems like a long shot.
Well, you know what, I don't know how it can't be considered for individual players. And it depends on the situation. Like, I'm not just talking about their own health. I mean, you know, the good news is that the majority of the players, my understanding is that they're coming out the other side. But the bigger picture is how it's impacted families. You know, you've got wives, apparently, who are now testing positive. You've got kids who are testing positive. So the larger family of the Vancouver Canucks now appreciably are being impacted by this. So if you're you know, a young father, and your family is now struggling with it because you brought it home because of what happened in a practice or however they contracted this. I mean, mentally, that's got to take an enormous toll. And as I reported in my NBC segment tonight, and then I tweeted after the fact, you know, the NHL is looking at as early as, I think, next Friday, April 16th, as a return date for the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm not talking about stepping back on the ice and slowly getting reconditioned. Game on the 16th of April. I mean, I don't know how that's possible. I don't know how that's possible to the point that you've made here, Jeff, but we'll see. I can appreciate logistically why the NHL wants to get the ball rolling. They're very, very sensitive to everything I've just said, specifically the players, the coaches, to the family members. But logistically, they do have to pay attention to what's going on around the North Division, and they want to make sure that the Vancouver Canucks get in 56 games. But this is physically and mentally, I can't imagine the challenge that these young guys are going to have to face in their families.
So, Drags, what's the level of stress in the front office of the Toronto Maple Leafs at a moment like this? You know, not information, but just speculation from your end, knowing what you know about how teams have dealt with this, with the news that, you know, William Nylander is not going to play tonight for precautionary reasons because he's had a close contact with someone outside the team that has COVID, but was at the morning skate today. I mean, how much of a shock of fear does that send through Kyle Dubas at this point?
Well, it has to. There's no doubt about that. And look, you know, do we know with certainty that what has happened in Vancouver can't happen in Toronto? Obviously, we don't. We can't know that. I suppose you could look at the Montreal situation and how that was contained, and there is the upside. Now, there's some process work that has to get done with the Toronto Maple Leafs and William Nylander. Now, number one, we don't know, again, absolutely rock solid certain that the person that William Nylander was in close contact with has actually tested positive. That hasn't been determined yet. So what if it's a false positive? They need to get through that process first. Willie, you know, I mean, players are tested on a daily basis. You know, if the person that may have tested positive actually is positive and Nylander is close contact, then he remains in protocol until he's cleared. But, you know, that might take a few tests, whatever that specific number of tests is, before he can get back into the group. That could be best case scenario. Best case scenario is the person that may have tested positive doesn't test positive, and William Nylander also tests negative, and then they go about their business. So that might take a day or two to figure out.
With Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider. So the Habs are in town tonight, and they're going to be a playoff team. They're aware of that. But Bergevin's done a lot of heavy lifting. During the offseason, he made a lot of moves, and he just acquired Eric Staal. So from that standpoint, I'm not bracing on them being overly active, but should I be between now and Monday? Could the Habs actually dip their toe in here?
Well, they could, because you're right. It's Mark Bergevin, and he's as crafty as they come, and he never shows his hand. And it doesn't matter with, you know, people he trusts in the media or the greater media when he has his availability. It's almost like a game for Bersh, right? Let's give him a little bit, but we're not giving him more than that. And, you know, then there's trickery involved, and I think he actually considers it a bit of sport to knock us off the trail. But he does have cap space to work with now that Brendan Gallagher is out for the rest of the season, the regular season anyway, 6-week broken thumb injury. So he's got approximately $3.75 million in LTI room that he could use to exceed their salary cap. But it doesn't sound like he's going to do that. It sounds like he's more inclined to just use that as the cap wiggle room that he may have had to create before Monday if Gallagher had stayed healthy. He's got Armia coming back. He's got Cole Caulfield waiting in the wings to make his NHL debut. So they might just stand pat with what they've got up front internally. But again, I'm always careful to qualify. It is Mark Bergevin. And if something lands on his plate that's of interest and he can make it work between now and the deadline, then absolutely he can do that as well.
Darren, Freddie Anderson, the more he has body examined or reevaluated, does that mean the likelihood of... I've said last week, I'm like, I'm not going after a goaltender. But with the uncertainty and with Campbell the uncertainty in him playing a bunch of games, is it more likely that they are looking at a goaltender at the deadline?
Well, they say they're not. But, you know, is that, again, is that rock solid? If a piece – and then who exactly could we be talking about here? You know, we believe that Dave Riddick of the Calgary Flames is a piece that, is potentially available. You've got Dubnyk. You've got, you know, some other, you know, somewhat interesting pieces that, if nothing else, could improve the third goalie situation for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But every time I check in on it, it's not how Freddie is progressing. Freddie is progressing. You know, historically speaking, and this dates back to Freddie with the Anaheim Ducks, he's been a player who needs to feel as close to 100% to do his job. And that's not a knock on Freddie. That's just how he needs to feel. And he wasn't 100%. That's been acknowledged. So maybe they saw enough in his game eroding that they felt like the lower body injury, it's best to deal with it now. So if it takes a little bit longer than everybody is comfortable with to get him 100% healthy, then that's money well, or that's time well spent. So until that changes, and as of today, I was told their position on it hasn't changed, then I don't think that they see adding a goaltender or improving their depth in that position as a priority. They're still focused on trying to land the right fit top six forward. So we'll see if Dubas changes between now and Monday.
Well, that's an interesting one, Dregs. When you look at the way Galchenyuk has fit into that unit with Nylander and Tavares, it's been, you know, competent, maybe not elite. But do you actually think there's someone on the market that they could, you know, feasibly land that is an upgrade from Galchenyuk?
Well, we've talked about it on varying platforms at TSN the last number of days. You know, I'm sure that Dubas has checked in on the New Jersey Devils and Kyle Palmieri. You know, we wondered in a quiz earlier this week if Nick Foligno from the Columbus Blue Jackets might be a good fit. You know, I'm sure that Dubas has been on top of a bunch of different forwards. Ricard Raquel from the Anaheim Ducks is another one that could make some sense. You know, just again, it all depends on where the sellers are positioning and when they position themselves as sellers. I talked to a number of GMs today, guys, and aside from the names that are obvious that we know are out there, Palmieri, Taylor Hall, you know, it's a bit of a crapshoot as to, you know, the willingness of the general managers to part with, you know, key pieces. And Ricard Raquel would be one of those with the Anaheim Ducks. Josh Manson is another one. There's lots of teams that would like Josh Manson, including the Winnipeg Jets. Bob Murray hasn't decided yet if he's willing to part with either one of those players. So until the sellers define with certainty that they are a seller, then, you know, the buyers like Kyle Dubas are kind of stuck in the mud waiting. I don't think the right fit is out there yet. I just don't. And or if Toronto thinks it's Kyle Palmieri or they think it's Nick Foligno, Toronto just hasn't paid the price that those two teams would want or need to make the transaction happen sooner than before the deadline.
Well, that's what would likely be happening here. I mean, there's only so many teams willing to sell and only so many quality players of substance that you really are willing to pay for, like a premium for. The Leafs are not going to be alone in that, right? There's so many teams that are kicking tires.
No, and you know, even on Taylor Hall today, guys, I got the sense this morning that there was a chance that Taylor Hall could be moved today just based on the dialogue that Kevin Adams is having with teams. You know, I believe the Islanders, the Bruins are in that mix, maybe another team or two that have entered in the last little bit here. But then it kind of settles down. It's the calm before the storm because, as I just said, maybe other teams enter the equation. Maybe one team decides that, okay, well, we're more willing now to pay a price than we were yesterday, you know, because they don't want to lose that player to the Islanders, or the Islanders don't want to lose him to the Bruins or wherever Taylor Hall ends up. We'll find out. But that's the type of strategy that happens when you're creeping close to the deadline, as we now are.
Well, we'll see. We are getting a lot closer, and we get the Masters starting tomorrow, and you're the middleman. O sets up with you know, different gear and this sweatshirt, and I had to stop by the house and pick it up tonight. I appreciate that. And it's a beautiful sweater. I mean, you've seen the hoodie. It's a thing of beauty.
It's outstanding. You know, what's the commercial with George from Seinfeld.
Oh, it's Tide or something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The kid's gone. that's exactly what it reminded me of when I first saw it. George's face on his hoodie, man. That thing is going to live forever.
That's such a good point. Imagine driving down Young Street. Like Greg Norman's driving down Young, and he sees the two of us walking by with this hoodie on. He'd be mortified.
Dude, yeah. There's an epic picture of Tiger Woods at a golf tournament because people started making T-shirts of Tiger Woods with his prison shot on the, like, his face of the prison shot.
Yeah.
And a guy got a picture going thumbs up, and Tiger was behind him and saw him, and he's just laughing. Yeah. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and the same thing with Greg Norman. Well, although he could beat the hell out of both of us. He's still a pretty good shot.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do?
He's a well-put-together dude, apparently.
That's what everyone keeps saying.
Oh, if I'm Greg Norman, I have my own hoodie walking on the beach.
A shot of yourself on the beach from a specific angle.
Every day I'd wear it.
Right. Tattoo material, potentially.
Yes!
Anyway, all right, Drex, it's a busy time of year. We appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys, on that note, have a good night.
You got it. Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. And the middleman for the Great White Shark hoodie being passed from one man to the next. I went and picked it up today. I appreciate that. And feeling good. We'll be rocking this tomorrow and Friday. Positive vibes only, courtesy of Greg Norman. And
dude, I went to Dreger's house last year. He lives in a different house now. Guy had the biggest house I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen some houses.
Yeah, it was a nice he's not living in a shack now, I can tell you that. He's still got a nice little quality spot, not far from where I'm at, and it was good to see him today. I mean, you never see anybody. Like, I've seen Dregs a couple times in the last month and a half. It's standard procedure when we're in studio. He comes in studio once or twice a week. You know, you never see anybody, but yeah, the Masters starts tomorrow. We made our picks earlier. Just to clarify, like every other tournament, if you pick the outright winner, you win, right? Just to clarify, if you have an outright winner, you win the tournament. If one of your guys misses the cut, it's 80-80 on the weekend, and it's total score, right? Total collective
That's
score.
That's right. That's and right.
We'll see what's
what Dave, just from looking at it, whose team do you kind of favor, Dave?
I've been getting heckled via text by my son who loves golf. He says I screwed Hayes by picking Morikawa over Schauffele. So there you go. Even though Delat thought it was a good pick. But yeah. My boy is like, Schauffele's a better player. He's tied for second there, and Morikawa has never played the Masters in April, which is a good point. Yep. But Morikawa is also, you know, a multiple time winner on the PGA Tour at a very young age, and he's actually putting it better lately than he ever has since he switched to that.
You know who's a good putter that might sniff? You know who's a good putter that might sniff? Scottie Scheffler might sniff around. He can hit it, man, and he can putt.
Yep.
So
there's so many. I don't know if he can take. There's so many guys. Like we didn't take Xander. We didn't take Scheffler. We didn't take Finau.
No,
Daniel Sergio's Berger, getting love this week.
Sergio's
getting love.
Spectacular.
He's been hitting well.
If the guy didn't putt with his eyes closed half the time, I'd think about taking
but
him.
But, dude, he won that tournament. He started putting with his eyes closed. It was in Mississippi or something. He won the tournament.
It's absolutely
how do you argue
outrageous.
With that?
I guess you can't, but we'll see. I mean, he does play this course well, clearly. He won the tournament. We know that. But, yeah, Paul Casey's another guy getting a lot of love. Victor Hovland is a guy that
the grappler was appalled that you guys did not pick Victor Hovland.
He was appalled. He was quite appalled. Well, we've got side action. There's a lot of different things going on, and like my buddy across the street, he started this Masters pool. He's been doing it for a long time, and I got in for the first time in November. This time, Owen and I teamed up, so I put in four teams, and I put in my own name four times, and he sends me a text. He goes, listen, a lot of guys that are like degenerates and put in multiple teams, they use different family members so it doesn't sound like they're such a degenerate. And all it says is Brian Hayes 1, Brian Hayes 2, Brian Hayes 3. And I wrote him back hour ago. I said, gear up, dude. I might have two more teams coming your way before
yeah,
tee
right.
up in the morning.
That's right.
Yeah, there's more coming. So make sure Brian Hayes 5, Brian Hayes 6. It's like Led Zeppelin albums for a degenerate golf gambler. But we'll get to it. We're looking forward to it. We'll tee up the Leaf game one more time. The Jays, again, coming off another loss this afternoon. We'll touch on that. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, regrettably, we do know exactly what you're talking about, Jerry. It is time for one more
horny hot take. Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro will be in Toronto 5 years from now. Jerry can't lie. The duo has made me a believer.
Okay.
There had to be some editing there.
That caught me off guard. Oh. I wasn't sure what to expect there. Duo, okay. What do we think? 5 years from now, Shapiro and Atkins, both still in office, running the Blue Jays.
I'm going to go 85%. Obviously, there have to be some success involved here for them to be here. Because if this thing, if it hits the fan, God knows what can happen in pro sports. But after everybody criticized them, after getting rid of Donaldson, after all that they were garbage, you have to like what they've instituted as far as a culture, the players, you know, everything about it. There's nothing you can look at the Jays program from their practice facility to the players. It's kind of a good deal. So I'm going 85%.
Okay. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go high too, because I think, look, when Shapiro came in, what was he known for? He was known as a business guy, right? And so much of what he's done has been about the business and about trying to make this a more modern, you know, relevant and profitable team. The practice facility in Dunedin is one. I think the next project, once COVID gets out of the way, the next project is going to be a new stadium. And that's going to take them years, right? You're going to have Shapiro in charge of a whole new stadium project that's going to take years. And unless it completely tanks, unless you get Tanner Roark after Tanner Roark coming out here and just completely underperforming for big money. You know, as long as they're decent, as long as they're competitive to Ray's point, they don't have to win a World Series to stay here for 5 years. I think they'll be around.
Yeah, I think it comes down to Shapiro and what his plan is in terms of a big picture. There have been some reports in the past refuted, and clearly they didn't follow through. That maybe he was going to the Mets. Didn't happen. Yeah. Maybe a couple of other teams have called on him. I think if Shapiro's here, Atkins will be here. They've worked together for a long time. They clearly respect each other. Shapiro's a fan of Atkins. He said it today. Having him here makes them a better team. And I think Atkins will be secure if Shapiro's here. I think what would lead Shapiro to maybe not be here in 5 years is if maybe ownership has promised him or suggested, we're building a new stadium and we want you involved. And then all of a sudden they say, actually, we're not doing that anymore. And then Shapiro decides, okay, then I want to find something new, or I want to go somewhere else that is going to give me more opportunity. That's the only thing that would stop me. And then clearly if the ball team just completely craters. But I think if Shapiro's here, Atkins will be here. I'll say 65%. That's high. Like, the three of us are high here. That 5 years is
we're
high.
Especially the
sports.
We're all
but,
high.
Yeah,
on
and
that one.
You know, but you know, this guy's not exactly Masai Ujiri, Hayes. Like, it's not like there's suitors coming out of the woodwork from every angle every few months for Mark Shapiro, right?
Yep. But baseball lifer.
And I just think, look, yeah. And that may be the narrative here. I think if we're looking 5 years ahead, the narrative may be, yeah, they're competitive, but they're not winning because they're very comfortable being a competitive team that makes money.
Yep.
And you don't have the Tim Leiwicki in that organization saying, no, we must win. This is not about just making the playoffs. This is not about sort of pretending you're competing with the Yankees. We have to compete with the Yankees. And I think that's going to be the five-year narrative here, and I think it will be interesting to see it unfold.
We'll see. We'll see. The Jays are back in action tomorrow night. They've got their home opener, day one of the Masters. The Leafs coming off a game against the Habs. It's going to be a fun one tomorrow. Great seeing you, Dave, as always. I think we'll do this again soon. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks anyway. Here's Dave Hester from the Toronto Star. The O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. I'm Brian Hayes. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We are back tomorrow at...
Greggy Norman loves a walk on the beach, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.